Welcome to our discussion of Parshat Matot Mas'eh, particularly Parshat Mas'eh, and it's called the Stations of the Desert. We know that in another religion they have something called the Stations of a certain walk that somebody took. And in Judaism we also have Stations of the Jews, where the Jews walked in the desert. Parshat Mas'eh, it's a laundry list. It's an itinerary of travels in the 40 years in the desert. The question is, 42 different stops, stations. And the question is, what's the significance? Okay, some of the things are significant. They actually underscore some of them by, they'll take a break and say, oh, by the way, that's where Aaron died. And, that's where they found an oasis. But other than that, just an itinerary. So why is that significant? Why would the Torah want to list that? So we're going to look at a whole bunch of different commentaries about it and see what it's all about. You know, broadly speaking, does it have some deep mystical meaning, or is it a more functional kind of a thing? So let's take a look and let's get started. Here we go. The meaning lies in the stations of the desert. Okay, so we always want to start with Rashi, and Rashi says the following. He says, why are these stations recorded here? In order to make it known the loving acts of the omnipresent, although he had decreed against them to make them move about and wander in the wilderness. You would not think that they wandered and moved about. You should not think that they wandered and moved about without cessation from one station to another station for all 40 years, and they had no rest. For you see that there are only 42 stages. And then he goes on to a calculation that 38 of them were in the first 2 years, so they only had about four stations for all the 40 years. Most of the time, they were in 38 years, they did not move. So it's in order to record whose benevolence? God's benevolence. That he did not make us travel too much in the desert. We were not running around like maniacs in the desert. We were mostly sedentary, stationary, etc. I left out the full calculation of Rashi. That is only, there are only a few stations. Rashi continues. At the end, give another explanation from the Tanakhuma. Tanakhuma is the Medrash. But Tanakhuma gave another explanation of why these stages are recorded. A parable. Maybe compared to a case of a king whose son was ill, who he took to a distant place to cure him. When they returned home, the father began to enumerate all the stages, saying to him, here's where we slept. Here's where we caught a cold. Here's where you had a headache. So even though some of the stages were not so pleasant, right? That's the question that I think some of the commentaries point out. I think the Aruch Haim said, these are not good stages. Some of these stages were terrible. So why would you list them? List them because looking back at it, you can always have a sense of humor about, you know, your family trips. Oh, this is where we got into an argument. This is where we got a ticket. This is where we had a terrible hotel, a motel. And, you know, you can kind of joke about it as you go back. So it's a loving kind of thing. It recalls the love of God for the Jewish people walking with him. It's not so much about God's kindness, but God's love for the Jewish people in that he wants to talk about our relationship. It's not about what God did for us, the first interpretation, but it's about our relationship with God that he's celebrating. And he loved the relationship so much. It was such a bonding experience that we feel like talking about all the different places we were together. It's looking back lovingly. And perhaps one might suggest, like when we look at Sukkos, is it about God putting us in the desert and letting us survive there? Or is it about the Jews walking in the desert? Similarly here, is it about the fact that the Jews came with him and he's so proud of us, he's so happy that he was with us for all these years? That's Rashi, two interpretations. The Ra'bag, this medieval Provençal commentary, philosopher, says he likes to list how many lessons do we learn from this parsha. So from each section. So he says the third lesson you learn is that because God wanted to bring us close to his worship, and he wanted us to easily believe in him, so he brought us to a place where there's no water, so we recognize the kindness of God when he gave them water. And then he brought them to a place where the water was bitter, and he made it sweet. And those are the bitter waters, Memara. And then he brought them to a place where there is a lot of water to show all the kindness of God. And the Paro thought that God taking us to the desert was ra'ah. It was a terrible thing to bring us to the desert. Terrible idea. But God showed that even though he brought us to the desert, it was all beautiful stuff. So actually, it's the desert helps us believe in God. It's about us. It's not about God. It's about us and how we came to believe in God. Or it's about God's kindness, similar to the first Rashi, maybe. But also a little different, that it's about how we should come to believe in God based on the wonders of the desert, that we had oases and special wells that we had and special springs that we found. Ramban quotes from the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, in the Guide to Perplex. Now we won't read the whole thing here, but he says, there was a great necessity in mentioning the stages of the journey. Although the miracles and wonders that were done were recognized as true ones by all who saw them, right? If you ate the manna, you knew there was manna. But later times, the events would be hearsay. And now among the greatest miracles in the Torah is Israel's survival in the desert for 40 years and finding the manna every day. Although these places were very far from cultivation and the city, all these manna are signs of events of a miraculous nature of the time. So he knew that these wonders would be subject to questioning. People will say they won't believe it, right? Today there are many skeptics who think that it never happened. So he says, people will think that we lived near the Arabs, and we lived near the habitable places. He says, therefore, in order to remove from the people's hearts such thoughts, to firmly establish the truth of these miracles, he recorded the permanent memorial, the stages, so that the future generations would see them and acknowledge the great wonders. So, in other words, sometimes if you want to verify something's historicity, you talk about the details. So, yeah, you jumped over the moon. Eh? So what did it look like when you jumped over the moon? Where were you when you jumped? Where did you land when you jumped over the moon? Et cetera. So to over here, looking at these 42 stations, and we say, wow, he could list all 42 stations. This is serious. This is real. This is not something above my system, something someone made up. So for the Rambam, it's about affirming our beliefs. Of course, the Rambam is very into answering the skeptics, and that's what his book is called, The Guide to the Perplexed or the Confused. So he imagines that this is what it's all about. The Rambam, in relation to this idea, probably reflecting on the Rambam who lived earlier, he said, first purpose of this list is to show the imut, the emet, the truth of what God told us. And that's why we have all the different stations, detail by detail, because true stories give details in order to show the veracity of it. So that was, Ralbag added that kind of idea. I mentioned it in the Rambam, but he's the one who added that point that when you want to show the veracity of something, you give details. Ralbag has another toelet, another lesson he learns from this, which is different. You'll tell me what it reminds you of. Odia otzim niflod Hashem. It shows the wonders of God, right? That sounds like the first Rashi, right? The loving of omnipresence that he decreed against them. He didn't make us wonder too much. It shows us the greatness of God's wonders and how he fulfilled his promise, and that the Egyptians died, God helped us. We were able to escape Egypt with lots of wealth. Still, we went out with great honor, and in the contrary, the Egyptians were busy burying their dead. So it is about God's kindness. Now the Ramban says something interesting. I'm personally, right, you quoted the Ramban, quoting the Rambam, but the Ramban, Nachmanides, from his own point of view, says something a little bit typical of the Ramban. He believes that there's mysticism. He doesn't tell, he's actually a secret mystic. He doesn't like to tell us what he's thinking about mysticism. He just sort of alludes to different mystical things. He says, Michtav HaMasayim, writing down these stations, it says specifically that Moshe wrote them down and all that. It's a mitzvah Hashem. It's a commandment of God. God said, write them down. Maybe because of what we mentioned, the Rashi or the Rambam, maybe some other reason, which you could think of. Maybe tonight we'll mention various reasons. But maybe there's something else that we don't know the secret. So it could. So Ramban suggests that there's really a great secret here that's hiding behind the whole thing. It's not just what meets the eye. It's not just a laundry list. There could be some other secret. It doesn't tell us what it is. We'll see later that some of the mystics later on who were less shy about telling us their mysticism, they will perhaps reveal what maybe the Ramban was hinting to. Sforno, who's not a mystic, said, I wanted all the journeys to be recorded in order to compliment the Jewish people who had followed him blindly through the desert. It's not about God. It's not about his miracles. It's about the Jews. Is it sukkah to celebrate what the Jews did walking through the desert, or is it sukkah to celebrate what God did, that he protected us in the desert? He takes the view it's about the Jews. They followed him blindly. So the reward for their faith would deserve to enter in reward for their faith. They would deserve to enter the land and inherit the land of Israel. That's why we went to Israel, because we were so faithful in following God. It's about the Jews. It's not about God. So a little closer to the second interpretation of Rashi, but certainly full-blown, it's about the Jews. It's about how wonderful it was that the Jews follow God through the desert. Chaim Sofer was a rabbi in Hungary, and not too long ago, a few hundred years ago, and he says the 42 masaot, 42 encampments, it corresponds to the 42 names of God. If you look in your prayer, Ana B'Koach, every three words is another name of God, and there are 42 names altogether. That's the 42 names of God. So it corresponds to the names of God. Now, what is that? So what does that got to do with anything? La'yodea so'ezme, if you know the secret, they went from maybe one name to another name of God, and they had to go to the next place that represented a different letter in the name of that holy name. So then each one of their mats, it says that the masahim lamotzaihem, their travels for where they were going out of. What are you going out? Since they went out of one level and they came into the next level, spiritual level, that's what they did. That's why it says that. But they're really 48. Anyway, so it has to do with the secret name of God. The Jews were exploring and walking with God, and somehow, again, I'm not a mystic, but something to the effect of we got closer and closer to God as we walked through, and we began to experience those higher and higher levels of God's names as we went through, or all the names as we went through. Nachal Kedumim is a chidah. Chidah is a Sephardic halachic authority. He's a jack of all trades. He's also a commentary. He's also a mystic. Shalfresh ilamasei shachaniyot nikraot. He says, I don't understand. We're only talking about the travels? What about the encampments? These were the 48 encampments. There were stations, right? They were not the travels. What's the name of the parsha? Masa'ot. Masa is a travel. It's a mission. And machanot, every time you go and then you can't encamp. Are we talking about both? He says, yeah, they were talking about the establishing when they encamped also. He says, you know what they were doing there? They were mevarin nitzotzei kedusha bein b'derech hilucham bein mechanayatam. He says, you know what they did? They did something very mystical. There's an idea that hidden in this world are all the sparks of God's holiness. Again, we're not talking about pieces of God. What we are talking about, I don't know. But we're not talking about pieces of God, because God doesn't have pieces. But there is holiness that's hidden in the world. And when the world started, the pieces got, this holiness got spread all over the place. And it's our job to bring the holiness out in every place. If I sit here and I make a bracha on my tea, then I'm bringing holiness to this place, this house I'm living in over the last 90 years. Hopefully I brought a lot of sparks of holiness out of this place, right? Each place we are, we bring out the holiness. And that's what they were doing. And actually, Eile Masahe, the gematria of Eile Masahe, the first two words of the parsha, of that parsha, are gevura, because it took a lot of heroism, gevura, to take out the sparks from every place in the middle of the desert. Desert's famous for having nothing, and yet they were able to take out the sparks. Then he mentions the 42 names, and it's you have to bring up one of the names. Again, I'm not a mystic. I don't know exactly what that means. But clearly, this idea of bringing up nitzotzot, that wherever you go, you have to find the sparks. You have to find the sparks wherever you are. And that's part of our job in life, is to find what's meaningful. You get stuck in a particular situation. Say, what's the spark in this situation? Where's the godliness that I can bring to or from this particular situation? Sfas Emes is the Ger Rebbe, one of the second or third Ger Rebbe. And he says, what does it mean? Talakatum Masob Yitzya Mitzrayim. He says, the Ilmasei Bnei Yisrael Asher Yatzu Me'eretz Yitzrayim. These are the Masob. We went out of Egypt. Out of Egypt. We're already almost in Israel already. He says, no, he connected with Egypt. Why? Because we needed to get out of Egypt. And each one of these places were a tikkun. By the Jews going there, they made a tikkun. What's a tikkun? They relate to the idea we mentioned before, the nitzotzot. You bring out the spark. You fix something. Everywhere you walk, you fix something to get out of Egypt, to continue to get out of the doldrums of Egypt. Rav Chaim HaKadosh was the Rabbi Chaim Ben Attar, also Sephardic, and he lived in Tzfat and other places a few hundred years ago. And he said, about 1700s, combined effort, these forces of sanctity were able to overcome the forces of impurity, which kept many of those lost sparks of sanctity captive. According to the Zohar, then these sparks could be captured while the Israelites were actively journeying, not while they were passively encamped. So he thinks there's a difference between when they're traveling or journeying. When they were encamped, they couldn't take out the sparks. When they were traveling, it was easier. And it is the Torah it has in mind when it says these are the journey. Ela is in sharp contrast with other journeys ever described anywhere, as never before had a journey been accomplished by so many elements of sanctity. So these are the real travels where they really did something everywhere they went. They took some sparks out everywhere. Usually people travel, they don't change anything. These guys really did it. They really took the sanctity out of each place. So a lot of the mystics are talking in a similar vein. The code note, or I don't know, not sure, I wasn't able to ascertain, it was quoted by the Chida. Now there must be another contemporary mystic. He says, Rav Kodnod Or, the rabbi who wrote the Kodnod Or, wherever that is, he explained like this. It says, Ilmasei kan ramzat Torah shel chub galut. A new idea, completely new idea. We mentioned that wherever you go, you take out the sparks. Well, that would apply well to the diaspora. But when you go into exile, what do you want to do in Memphis? What do you want to do in Columbus? What do you want to do in Australia? Wherever Jews are, you want to take out the sparks from that place. Take the best of American culture, you bring it to Israel, you take the best of English culture, German culture, Spanish, and Russian, and we bring it to Israel. So there's a hint here that we're going to go into Golas, we're going to go into exile, and the Geula, the redemption was through God. Says, it's true, the redemption is through God, but it's also through the human being, the flesh and blood, we also play a role as well. When the redemption is just by Moses, it doesn't really stay. So there's more staying power if God does it. He says if you look at the acrostic, Masay Bnei Yisrael, it alludes to Edom, Madai, the Medes, the Medians, Bavel, and Yavan, a lot of the different kingdoms that we were subjected to over the years are alluded to in this. It also alludes to the name of God, because the Shekhinah is with us in Golus, because God is with us wherever we go. So these travels, God wants to see them not. If you think about it, the desert was our first Golus, right? In some ways, the desert was a Golus. It was outside of Israel. So it's a harbinger of the Golus that we live in, where it's our job to bring some redemption for ourselves, and also God should redeem us from each place. Sfas Emes is sort of compared to different things we're reading. He says, Tala comes from Masos, because he has to try. Why did he connect the Masos with the Exodus, as the Or Chaim said, to show you that just like when we went out of Egypt, it was a redemption for all generations, so we should remember it for all generations. So too, all these Masaot, all these travels, were ahana, preparation for all Dorot, all generations, that we should fix all the dangerous places we go to. Like the dangerous desert with all the snakes and everything. And each travel was a war against the place we were going. And this is all for us in exile. Again, this alludes it's like the Kohen Gadol. It's all for us in exile. That what? These low generations that we live in, we have to go through a lot of wars to fight the places where we are, where we always have a war to get the stuff out of wherever we are. So now, of course, a little bit of a Haredi sort of view here. Question is, you know, can you really turn wherever you are into Jerusalem? You know, there's a whole question, you know, can you turn Berlin or Memphis or New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or, you know, Melbourne into Jerusalem because you took out all the sparks? You know, that's a dangerous idea, sort of anti-Zionistic idea. On the other hand, we do need to fight those battles. Wherever we are, we have to be in battle with the negative elements of wherever we are. Again, depending on your view on society, you might view the society as more negative or less negative, but there's always a battle to be fought of Jewish values versus whatever other values. There are some of which are antithetical to ours. Not always all of them, but many things often are. So the Sfasemes and the Nachal Kedumim have a certain similarity. It's about the Golus. Lekach Tov is a Medrash. My daughter-in-law is working on who this was. He was a rabbi, lived a little bit after Rashi, France. He says, God liked it when we were in the desert, not when we were in Egypt. Because when we were in the desert, we had the clouds of glory with us. So it's a remembrance of the clouds of glory, of the beautiful arrangement that Jews had in the desert. Shamshin Val Hirsch is always interesting. He says as follows. These travels are connected to a lot of different episodes. Each episode should have been mentioned. They could have been mentioned by various family members, tribes, their children, those who remember these things. But these things that happen in these places, whatever happened to the particular families and the tribes in those places, like an old travelogue, you go through an old picture book of a family, right? So you say, "This is a very nice pictures, Mom, but I don't know who any of these people are." So, "Oh, I can't remember. I don't know who is that." And then you say, "Great, now because this whole picture album, it doesn't have any captions." So the same thing. This is a snapshot of the 40 years. Here's the 42 places we went. Yeah, so what happened in each place? We don't remember. You're not going to write that. This is for everybody. Those places were very meaningful to particular families, tribes. But this, the Torah is for everybody, so we're not going to tell you what happened. So we have it's an oral tradition of what the places were. And in the written tradition, it just gives you a flag post of each place where we were to remember that tradition. So he claims that I'm not sure exactly what he means, but I might suggest he's saying something the following. It's kind of a radical idea that, you know why we're having trouble understanding what the meaning of this laundry list is? Because we don't know what it hints to. Each place hints to something that happened. We don't remember what happened. So, you know, it doesn't mean as much to us. If you do your homework, maybe you could find, you know, certain places here where you could discuss, you know, what happened in the knowledge that we do have from the Tanakh. What happened in each of these places? So, but are there other places where we don't have that tradition? Maybe it's lost. Maybe there are other midrashim. Maybe they're hidden traditions of what these things mean. So the Ramban and the Rav Shamshon Val Hirsch are both saying that, you know, we don't know. It's a secret, or it was known at one time, but it's lost. It sounds like some modern scholarship where they'll sometimes say, "Oh, what does this verse mean?" I have no idea. But at the time it was known what it was. So now as Jews, it's hard to say that. Some things in the Torah, we want to say that it has meaning. We The meaning is not so elusive that it meant something once upon a time. It doesn't mean anything anymore. We want to say that every verse has a meaning. So how do you deal with this? So he also says that there may be an oral tradition of what each verse means. He says, also, every time we encamped, it was based on God's word, Al Pi Hashem. So therefore, it's like a mitzvah. And wherever we went, we reached a new goal. And God was looking for a new place that was appropriate for that goal. So this is a non-mystical way of saying what we said before. They're making progress, but it's not a mystical progress. It's just a practical tshuva progress. And first they had a masa, they traveled, and then they had motza. Then they went out so they could travel, they could go somewhere. But the people didn't really understand. They were unhappy. They had to leave. They didn't understand what purpose they had. They didn't get the whole thing. But really each place had its own purpose. The Malbim was also from the Reb Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch from the 1800s. And he said, every place where we went, it says we went out. And going away from an area means you have to sort of get out of the nature of that area. He says, each time we went out of a place, we went out again from Egypt. We continue to get ourselves out of the pitfalls of Egypt. There are 42, but we often say that really it's like the 49. It's like the 49 levels of impurity we went down to in Egypt. So we come out using these 42 stations plus another 7 to get out of the impurity of Egypt. So each station takes us a little more out of Egypt. Reminds us of the Sfasemes, who says that it's our job every day of a year to remember the Exodus. Why remember the ancient history? Now it's not ancient history. We're still trying to get out. The extent that we're not where we're supposed to be, we're always trying to get out of Egypt every single day. Sfasemes, along these lines, says, again, Sfasemes says different things every year. So, it's not like he has to be consistent. He says, I don't know, are they traveling or are they going out? Which one is it? So he says, the Masa is from Egypt. And after they went out of all the Masa, then they're actually out of Egypt. Because with each travel, they're getting further away from Egypt until they came to Eretz Yisrael. And a person has to try to get away from the materialism that they're in order to cling to the ultimate ethereal one, to God. So we can be pure of heart. We don't have anything material. Hasidic writings, there's an idea of getting away from the physical. But certainly there are a lot of things we want to get away from. And each time we get away, like the Malbim says, each time we're getting a little more out of Egypt. So Asema says the same thing. We're a little more out of Egypt every time we go. So Asema also says another occasion that we went out, and we're traveling. He says, these were the 49 levels of impurity. We went out of them. It was part of the Exodus from Egypt. And then we fixed each thing wherever we were. Rashi says that we went back 7. At one point, we went back 7 paces. So that was the 7 plus 42. And Moshe Rabbeinu gave us back all of our levels. Each Jew is also like that. That we are walking, and we need to remember that where we're going, and we're trying to get everything that happened to us from the beginning of our walkings is getting us to where we want to go. There's an idea that sometimes we have this trial, and this travail, and this problem, and this, and each one is helping us get there. As Yaakov said, Yaakov says, with my staff, I passed over. He's remembering his stations that he took. There are stations of life. And perhaps the best one, the one who said it best, is the Rebbe of Slonim. Sorry about that. Fix that there. But the Rebbe of Slonim said as follows. He said, in the holy books, it says, He says in the holy books, meaning mystical books, the Hasidic books, it says that these 42 things, it's not a small thing. You might say, the laundry list is a phone book. Let me turn the page, go to something more significant. He says, no. It's one of the most important parshas, the biggest parsha in the whole Torah, because it's hiding all kinds of wonderful, elevated things, which are for that generation and for future generations, as we saw before in the Sfas Emes and also the other Sefer. As we say in the Sefer HaKadoshim, in the Sefer HaKadosh, Degel Machane Ephraim, one of the early Hasidic writings was Degel Machane Ephraim. And he was early, so he quotes the Baal Shem Tov, the first Hasidic Rebbe, and he says, "Gikol Masar Hayu Membet." Altogether, there were 42. Those are the 42 stations of a person's life. Every person has 42 stations from the day they were born until they're like going out of Egypt. And each they go from stage to stage until they come to the living land, the land of the living at the end of life. And that's why they're showing us the path for every Jew to know the way they should go on all the days of their life, to go from path, from station to station. And he says, now these 42 things, the Rebbe of Solonin believes, and the Hasidic Rebbe's believe that the Torah is nitzchius. The Torah is not about some history. It's not a history book. This parsha was told for every generation, every individual who's going through his life, there are 42 stations. The life, every person, is like the Maaseh Bnei Yisrael who went out of Egypt, which is the ultimate impurity. And it was like a birth when we went out of Egypt. These 42 brought us the land of Israel, source of holiness. And there we really got somewhere. I thank Rabbi Ernie Roll for pointing this out to me once about the 42 stages. So he's claiming that everyone in our own lives, we have 42 stages. Rabbi Roll suggested maybe we could, you know, take a survey of our own life and try to map it out, you know, depending how old you are, to see, have you had any stations yet? Where have you gone? What are your stations? What did you learn from it? You know, I was in this shul, I was in that shul, I was in different cities. What did I learn at every stage? And how did I get out of Egypt a little better with each stage? Or how could I get out of Egypt better? Or how could I, in retrospect, get out of Egypt a little better with each stage? And how can I get to where I want to go? So, as Ramban says, this parsha has a lot of secrets in it. There's a secret of life itself. It's not a history. It's not a log of travelogue. No, it's about our lives. Now, it's an interesting debate whether, you know, the Torah is so little that it's just about my life. Maybe it's about the national life. You know, so one might raise a question as to whether this is true, that the Torah is just a self-help book for Joel Finkelstein to figure out what's in his life. Maybe we should look at it in a broader view, that it's about the stations of the Jewish people, like the, who's that? Not the Nachah Kedumim, the Kodnod Or said that it's about our national goals and how we get out of Egypt through the generations. But in any event, those are some thoughts on what this parsha, which is really somewhat enigmatic, somewhat strange, somebody would think it was sort of boring to list all these places. Surely there's great meaning behind it, and I shared some of the meanings with you. But this time, we'll conclude this class. Thank you for joining us.